Wonderful Sunday, folks. Galen Clavio here, and welcome to the Bracket Racket. A little earlier than normal, as we decided to move the program so that everybody out there at your Super Bowl parties didn't have to rush right home and turn us on Google+. So good to have you folks joining us, as always, as there's a lot to talk about in college basketball from the past week, and we'll just get right into it. Kyle Lamb joining us on the show. Kyle, how's your Super Bowl Sunday treating you so far?
You know, it's just like any other day for me. You know, this might be outrageous to say, but I don't partake in the whole Super Bowl tradition the way everybody else does. To me, it's just another day. I'll watch the game in passing. I do have a question though. Do we have to pay royalties every time we mention the word Super Bowl on the show?
Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. I hope not. I do think it's. I mean, I fully expect Roger Goodell to send a cease and desist email on this podcast because of the fact that we've mentioned Super Bowl as many times as we have already. So yeah, wouldn't shock me one bit.
Yeah, David, I'm gonna write the totals up.
Yeah, David Griggs. I'm surprised, David, you're not at the Super Bowl. I figured you would have gotten complimentary suite tickets.
Well, I mean, after what happened last year, the whole power outage. I mean, I still insist that was not my fault. But they don't want me back for some reason. And then earlier, I mean, when I was in New York over Thanksgiving for the parade, that went kind of bad too. So I figured I'd stay home and watch Mercer versus USC Upstate.
I have a theory that David's people just didn't pass along the message.
Or maybe they took the tickets themselves. Have you thought about that?
The thought did occur to me. I'm starting to wonder about my people here. I mean, I treat them like that, but they're my people. I am not theirs.
That's right. Oh, goodness. Anyway, let's dive right in, folks, and let's start talking some of the games, some of the teams that have gone down in some cases, gone up in others. So I think we probably need to start with what occurred yesterday because, obviously, the big headline story didn't happen until the very end of the day, but Arizona ends up finally losing. They fall to Cal on the road. David, we knew Arizona wasn't going to go undefeated. At least I think most people did. Hopefully they did. We did. We knew that. But, yeah. I mean, did you see anything there that gave you pause about Arizona, or is just a case of a team losing to a relatively good team on the road in conference?
I think it's the latter. And, I mean, with Arizona not being quite at full strength, that played a role. And this is the time, I think, when you start to see from these highly ranked teams, it becomes monotonous. Like, you're going into a game where you're the absolute showcase, sometimes the highlight of the season. Cal probably won't have another home game like that the rest of the year, albeit Cal is good. And I think teams start to get a little bit bored with their seasons. Not that they're not taking it seriously, but you start to see that kind of the end of January, the beginning of February, up until the time when conference tournaments start. I mean, Arizona might drop another one, but it is exhausting to get that up for every game, every night. And Cal is not a sub-NIT team. I mean, it's not a walk in the park. You have to play really well to beat them. And when you're playing tournament teams on the road and they're giving you their best game of the year, you're not going to win all of them. I mean, it's damn near impossible. I mean,
it is.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, you know, Kyle, we almost saw another undefeated team drop one yesterday. So, you know, this is around the time of the year where most of the teams fall off, you know, a little bit. And like David said, going undefeated is kind of pie in the sky given how long the season is and how little variation there really is from team to team.
Unless you're playing Wichita State's schedule.
And the funny thing is even them, they're going to have a problem.
They're probably, yeah.
You know, it's just there's a grind involved in it. But, Kyle, I mean, obviously last night, Arizona, we're still talking about them, but then Syracuse is able to knock off Duke in overtime. Who's your best team right now? Is it one of those two, or is it another team?
Well, let me preface this. I want to say, first of all, I actually think the biggest headline last night was not Arizona losing, but Arizona potentially losing Brandon Ashley for the year.
I agree. We were going to get to that in a second.
Yeah, but, you know, and as you said, we'll talk about that. But, look, I think, even despite yesterday, I actually still would take Kansas. You know, whether they're the best team or not, I would take Kansas as my national championship pick right now, even despite them getting just absolutely abused by Bevo. But look, I want to say this. I am fearful for all the media hype and absolute ridiculousness leading up to the Duke-Syracuse game. I fear that the fact that this Duke-Syracuse game actually lived up to the hype is going to give the media open season to just continue to be hyperbolous in the future about these games. And it was a great, fantastic game, probably the best of the year, and the media actually got one right, but I fear it's like a blind squirrel finding a nut for once. And
Kyle, just a very quick aside, sorry. My people tell me, and I'm trying to figure out if this is true, did you realize this was the largest on-campus crowd in history?
You know, I'm pretty confident that unless you had the game on mute, you could have not known that.
I watched the whole game on mute. I feel like I'm way ahead of the curve here. So,
well, you did yourself a huge favor, trust me. I think this game was fun to watch as a fan. I'm not going to make the mistake of reading too much into either team because of the way the game was played. I still, despite all of yesterday's results, I would still take Kansas. I think Arizona is the second best team, depending on the status of Ashley. I mean, if Ashley is indeed out for the season,
let's talk about that, because I don't think because a lot of people don't follow West Coast basketball that closely. I don't think they grasp what Brandon Ashley has brought to the table. So Ashley's a sophomore. He's a post player, and that's a little bit of a rarity on this Arizona team. You look at what he's done so far in the season. He's scoring at a very efficient clip. His shooting has been excellent. I think he's like 250th in the country in true shooting percentage. He uses about 20% of their possessions. He's on the floor about 70% of the time. And, you know, you just all across the board, this is a key element of what they're doing. I mean, you could make an argument that, at least from a scoring perspective, he's been more valuable than Aaron Gordon. He's been more valuable than a lot of the guys that are also playing on a regular basis. I mean, this is a guy who has taken, I think, the third most shots on this team so far this season, behind only Gordon and Nick Johnson. So if that piece is indeed gone from this team, I don't know that it necessarily affects the Pac-12 much, for reasons that we'll talk about here in a little bit, but from a national perspective, it probably takes Arizona legitimately out of the national title hunt.
Yeah, which is, you hate to see that happen, but yeah.
Go ahead, Kyle.
No, I think so. I mean, fortunately for them, I mean, they do have a good deep interior. I mean, they got a good front line. I mean, they can stomach the loss a little bit, but the problem is he really is he's a dynamic player that I think takes a lot of focus away and keeps teams from being able to focus on Aaron Gordon. And so this would be a big loss. They'll be a really good team even without him, you know, probably a top five team. I don't know if they're a national title contender without him.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, anything could happen, but you think about teams that have had injury issues, and very, very few of them at that high level are able to sustain an injury to a guy that plays that many minutes, that scores that many points, and still be anywhere close to the same team. So it is definitely something to keep an eye on. Now, the thing with Arizona moving forward is, you know, they're playing in the Pac-12, and let's just go ahead and talk about that for a second. They've got, you know, a schedule run out that doesn't include UCLA, who's probably the second best team in the conference. They still have to play at Arizona State, which just from a rivalry perspective is going to be difficult. They still have to swing into the Utah-Colorado road trip, and they still have to go to Oregon and Oregon State. They've got some pitfalls ahead, and I think that, you know, the superiority that they've enjoyed thus far has been mostly talent-based and cohesion-based, and I think that starts to go away. I don't know that necessarily there's anybody in the Pac-12 that can take advantage of that. I guess the best options there would be UCLA and Cal. David, do you like either of those teams, you know, possibly being able to compete with Arizona down the stretch?
I don't think so. I mean, even without him, I still think they're better than the Pac-12. It wouldn't surprise me if they dropped another game. Like Oregon, for instance, it is very hard to go into Oregon and win. And if you don't believe me, just look at how much trouble Oregon and Oregon State have had going into Oregon and winning recently.
Yeah, well, they are definitely an enigma. Although Oregon, we've kind of left them for dead, but they finally picked up 2 wins in the last 3 games that they played, which is you got to take your hat off to them, because that was something that they just were not able to do. They're a weird case from a profile perspective. They're still 40th in KenPom ratings. They're 15-6, and they're now 3-6 in conference. It's not a good 3-6. I mean, their wins are Utah, Washington State, and USC. But you look at their schedule overall, and they've at least done a few things. I would still hesitate having them in the field at this point, but they're relatively close, and that's mostly due to how terrible the bottom of the bubble is at this stage.
Right.
So,
you know, it's kind of funny. I wanted to point this out. We started early January with 7 undefeated teams, and four of those undefeated teams, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Oregon, and Iowa State, have lost 4, 5, 5, and 6 games this past month.
I know.
But interestingly enough, 3 of the 4 started off February right with a win. So maybe they're getting back to where they needed to be.
They're just a weird cycle of the moon or something. Or maybe Mercury was retrograde in Capricorn or something. I don't know. I mean, it's bad Januaries do happen. And it'll be interesting, like a lot of these teams, whether it's Oregon or Wisconsin or Ohio State or Baylor, whether they can bounce back here. And that's been the weird thing, I guess, is these bounce-back things. We're going to get to the bounce-back teams in a second, but let's talk a little bit about that Syracuse-Duke game. Kyle, you mentioned it already. Here's my concern with this game, and I think that this is something that I always get worried about when Duke, in particular, plays a good game against a quality opponent. Duke was in the game primarily because they were shooting threes all over the place. And I think that, you know, even though Syracuse generally does a good job of getting their 2-3 zone extended far enough out that they can combat a lot of three-point shooting, that is ultimately the Achilles heel of Syracuse. It always has been, is if you've got really good outside shooters and you can pump shots in, at some point it'll be more than they can deal with because they're just not going to come out and guard you man-to-man. I almost look at this and I say, you know, as well as Duke played, I don't know that they would have been able to play that well against a similarly highly regarded team if it hadn't been Syracuse with Syracuse's particular defense. So I almost feel like now we're going to see Duke talked about consistently as, you know, 1-seed or 2-seed caliber team, when really they still haven't done much against anybody else that would demonstrate that.
Yeah, and I mean, I was genuinely impressed with Duke, and I have always felt that Duke is typically overvalued. I mean, not just this season, but a lot of seasons. You know, for instance, over the last 4 years, I think they only have 4 true road wins against tournament teams, and 2 of those were North Carolina. So, I mean, I think Duke is good, but it seems like, I mean, you know it from the mock committees and from when we talk about it, I just never think that they're as good as everybody else seems to think. But having said that, I completely agree with what you're saying, and really I hadn't thought about it in those terms before, which, again, maybe now I'm back to thinking Duke is once again overvalued. But I was legitimately impressed with Duke. Wow.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, I was going to say, here's the problem. I was high on Duke the last several games. They had been playing a lot better basketball. Their defense had been improving. I thought Duke was going to win this game. They actually didn't. But here's the problem now. While everybody else is going to be impressed with Duke and now think Duke is like a legitimate title contender, I'm actually the opposite direction. Here's the problem people are missing. Duke shot 41% from three-point range yesterday. That's about actually their season average. That's not really that big of a deal. They were able to take more attempts because of the Syracuse zone, like you mentioned. And actually, Syracuse did not play very well in that zone last night.
Right.
Duke actually played a lot better on the offensive glass, though, because of the Syracuse zone, and got a lot more offensive rebounds than they typically get. But here's what people are missing, and this is why I'm not impressed with Duke after last night, because their defense took a huge step back and gave up 91 points in 68 possessions.
That's really bad.
And people will say, well, the fouls. The reason they were getting fouls called on them is because they weren't guarding anybody on the perimeter. Syracuse was penetrating. They couldn't stop it, and they had to foul them inside.
Yeah.
I had been very impressed with Duke the last 4 or 5 games. I thought they took a huge step back last night defensively. If they play defense like that, they're not winning any titles. They're not going to a Final Four.
I mean, and to a certain extent, the same thing can be said about Syracuse, but I think Duke is the bigger concern because Syracuse has some fallbacks, and I don't know that Duke necessarily has those fallbacks at this point. I mean, Duke allowed 1.34 points per possession. That's crazy. Now, Syracuse allowed 1.31, which is also crazy, but we knew that that was something that Syracuse would have trouble with. I mean, Syracuse playing against teams that just bomb from outside, they'll lose to average teams in most years that do that. So the fact that Duke didn't win despite hitting 15 threes, I think is kind of a bad sign for them, frankly. And I think, Kyle, you hit the nail on the head. It comes back to that lack of defensive presence. And that's something that we've known all season about this Duke team. So it'll be interesting. It had been a nice run for Duke. I mean, they had a nice six-game win streak, starting with that win at home against Virginia, which, frankly, they were lucky to win. But, you know, again, you look at what they've done overall, and the wins that they have in that six-game stretch, none of them are really that impressive. Obviously not the Pitt win for reasons that we've gone into in the past on this show. But even Florida State, I mean, Florida State last night, a team that it was funny, I was telling Kyle the other day, like, oh, you know, I think Florida State's safely in the field, and they have been for a while. They don't look safely in the field anymore. They lose at home to Clemson, and that's just not a good thing to do. So it does call into question, well, how good was that 22-point win that they had over the Seminoles at Cameron? So, yeah, but again, Kyle, going back to your original point, the media gets so intoxicated with the oxygen of these big games that they end up just absolutely going nuts on the hyperbole and casting, you know, two teams that they just are in awe of into roles that, frankly, they're not suited for. I think Syracuse will be fine. I mean, we know this about Syracuse. Syracuse's tournament success is always predicated on who they're matched up against, not so much what their level of talent is. Not Syracuse's, I mean. With Duke, I don't think that we solved any real issues yesterday.
Galen, here's the real problem, and I made this point in our email discussion. The media makes the mistake of conflating great basketball to watch as a spectator with great basketball qualitatively in terms of predictability. That was a great basketball game to watch last night. It doesn't make these two teams great basketball teams.
Right.
I mean, so, Toledo and Ohio was great basketball to watch. It really was.
I mean, it was a good game.
I'm furthering Kyle's point here.
Yeah, you're right.
But yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about a few other games that occurred that are of note yesterday and in the couple of days before. First off, I think we really need to get like a crew out to several locations and figure out what the hell's going on with some of the teams that are out there. Let's start with this Ohio State-Wisconsin game. Now, Wisconsin, of course, at one point was a clear one seed. They were 16-0. They started off conference play 3-0, and they've lost five of their last six games, and not all of them have been impressive teams that they've lost to. They lost to Northwestern at home on Wednesday. They turn around and lose to an Ohio State team that was similarly flagging, having lost, five of their last seven, or five of their last six going into that game. And really, it was one of those games, Kyle, where both teams probably deserved to lose at the end, and yet Ohio State kind of sucked slightly less than Wisconsin. Obviously, you know, if you're either of these teams, you take a win however you can get it. But, I mean, I don't even know what to say about either of these squads anymore. I don't know that they're good. I don't know that they're bad. I don't know how they'll fare against teams outside of the conference. What do you make of it all?
You know, I think that last minute of the game, that was absolutely a perfect microcosm of two teams that just couldn't get anything to go right for them. I mean, that last minute was comical. And I actually, in a strange way, from an Ohio State perspective, I actually felt better about them for that last minute just because you just feel like maybe they're not really that bad. Just things are just going hideously wrong. Maybe it's a full moon. I don't know. But, I mean, when Lindsell Smith, he misses an open layup with 11 seconds to go, grabs his own rebound with 8 seconds to go, seemingly he's going to come down with it, either goes up for a dunk or he can pass it out and kill off another 5 to 6 seconds off the clock. And what does he do? He falls down and turns the ball back over with 8 seconds to go with Wisconsin. And then, of course, Wisconsin couldn't get up a very good shot at the end there. And it just, to me, that the way the whole, the officiating in that game, the way the whole last minute transpired, it just looked like two teams that just couldn't get anything to go right for them. And I think, I do think for Ohio State, they played well the last 5 minutes of the game to get back in it, and I still think it was a big deal for them to get over the hump and win this game. I think this is going to get them going. I actually think they're going to go into Iowa City on Tuesday night and pull off a win. I think you'll see Ohio State start to bounce back a little bit. But it was just a game that just was – I mean, it was a perfect microcosm.
Yeah. And David –
Wisconsin outlost Ohio State. There's no other way to put it.
Go ahead. Yeah. David, before you jump in, there's a corollary team I want to talk about here, and that's Michigan State. And for those who missed this, Michigan State – you know, they come off that big road win at Iowa, and then they turn around and they lose on a neutral court to Georgetown, who, I mean, if you look at – we think of the brand name of Georgetown, and we're like, oh, Georgetown, they're obviously a top 25 team. No, this was a Georgetown team that had lost 5 in a row, 6 of 7, had lost by 10 at home to Seton Hall, who's not coming anywhere near the tournament unless they buy a ticket. You know, had lost at home in overtime to a Marquette team that can't really beat anybody these days. You look at Michigan State, and they looked completely out of it from a mental perspective. I mean, they were struggling with free throws, they were struggling with shots. Gary Harris single-handedly kept them in the game, and it wasn't enough. And they end up losing to Georgetown, a team they really shouldn't have lost to. You notice when you look at the Big Ten. And really, Michigan State isn't even a major part of this issue because they've won games relatively with relative ease. But yeah. There are, what is it, all like 9 of the 12 teams in the conference have at least 5 losses, and Northwestern currently is alone in 4th place in the Big Ten. So I guess my question is,
well, who didn't see that coming?
Well,
I mean, really, I mean,
my question to you is this conference good? Are they bad? Like, what? How do you read this at this point?
The way I read it, in this might sound like a cop out. I think it is good for the most part, and they're kind of beating up on themselves. Now, Michigan State is kind of an outlier. They really did play badly. It's a game that they clearly should have not won, only won, but won easily, despite being shorthanded. And you don't often see this with Tom Izzo teams, but having said that, I can see how you can suffer an injury, go into a rivalry game, lose it, go onto the road and win unexpectedly, and then 4 days later be in New York. And I think sometimes it's so much of a whirlwind, it is kind of hard to focus. Now, again, we're used to seeing Michigan State handle that and handle it well. There's some other teams, like Xavier comes to mind, that can't handle that at all. Right. But, you know, sometimes I just think circumstance on and off the court kind of factor in, and I think a little bit that's what was going on. And it part of it was that it was Georgetown, and I don't think it was a game that I don't think that they thought they were going to struggle to win. But again, shorthanded, it's hard to beat anybody, even Georgetown.
Well, again, I guess the question then becomes, can Michigan State, because I mean, we don't know when Payne's coming back. We think we know when Dawson's coming back. I mean, do you see a scenario, Kyle, let me throw this to you, where Michigan State can't put it back together again at the end of the season? Because really, I mean, while they're a talented team, I mean, they've got the talent to be a Final Four contender, national title contender, we're asking a team that really hasn't shown a huge amount of cohesion, even when they did have everybody together, to be able to, you know, put themselves in a position to go down the stretch, meld as a group, and make it all the way to the Final Four. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't want to channel my inner Dan Dockich here and talk about, you know, this team being special or whatever, but I do think that Michigan State has been at full strength and have a full unit together for very few games this year. You know, because if you think back, Matt Costello was out early. Payne had missed a couple games early before this stint. You know, they've had guys out all year long. I don't think they've been at full strength for maybe more than 3 or 4 games.
Right.
I do think if they can get their full group back you know, late in the year and maybe hit some stride, you know, I could see them reaching the Final Four, national title contender status, you know, at that point. The problem is it depends on when Dawson will come back, because if he doesn't come back till right at the very end of the year,
right.
Well, then it's hard to say if they'll ever have enough games under their belt to get back into rhythm. I think they've got the potential to do it, but I don't know if they're going to have enough games together to really start playing good basketball again.
Let's switch topics then to other teams that we have questions about, and one that's, I mean, I feel somewhat vindicated in this because I called this very early on in the proceedings when the polls initially came out. But if you look at what's going on right now in the Big 12, the big disappointment, if you're going to go by the ratings, is Oklahoma State, who has now tumbled to a tie for, I think, sixth place in the conference. Them and Iowa State are both 4-4. Oklahoma State, 16-5 overall. They've lost three of their last four. Now, two of them were on the road to Kansas and Oklahoma, but then they lose to Baylor, who was pretty much left in the middle of the road dead before this game. And you look at even the losses on the road, a lot of those, it's been not so much because they got outplayed per se. I mean, that's been part of it, but it's also been kind of this petulance that we've seen out of Marcus Smart. There's been a lack of discipline on the team overall. They just, you know, again, they don't look like a team that at one point was considered to be a legitimate top 10 caliber squad. David, do you see tailspin potential here with this Cowboys team?
Yeah, no, I don't know how much tailspin, but even, we had this discussion, even in November and December, they didn't look like they were playing up to their potential. And it's just, well, you know, they'll come out of it. But, you know, that game, was it Purdue that they played and really struggled? And then they struggled against Butler?
Yes.
And, okay.
All that was in the Orlando games, and then they turned around and lost to Memphis in the final.
Well, in fairness, they got up by 20-some against Purdue, and then just kind of collapsed at the end, but...
Yeah,
I mean, they beat Purdue by 10, but the point remains.
Yeah, that, I mean, again, it's just to see a collapse that, and again, it was early, but they still seem to be exhibiting those types of symptoms to where they're really not gelling, they're really not solid, and I could see them continuing to struggle. The loss at Oklahoma didn't alarm me that much, but part of the reason it didn't alarm me was because I think you and I, and I think even Kyle, decided this team isn't as good as what they were advertised in the preseason to be.
Well, I think we knew that. I mean, we talked about that long before. I think it's funny, though, because if you look at the other teams other than Kansas in the Big 12, I think you could make an argument that Oklahoma State has more talent than any of them.
They do.
But you look at the the way the coaching jobs that are being done and the way that the teams are playing together, whether it's Texas, who's kind of come out of nowhere, whether it's Oklahoma, whether it's Iowa State, hell, even Kansas State.
Colorado, I think, another good Big 12 team.
Yeah. I really think that it's going to be interesting down the stretch here because, as you find with all of these Big 12 teams, there's just not really many nights off. I mean, here's Oklahoma State's next five games. They've got Iowa State at home. They've got Texas Tech and Texas on the road. They've got Oklahoma at home, and then they have to go to Baylor. I mean, there's a legitimate shot they could lose all five of those games, and I don't think I would be shocked if they did.
Galen, I don't think there's a lot wrong with Oklahoma State. I just think it's what you said. I mean, there's a reason why Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa State, Baylor are all struggling the way they are, and some of it is because they're playing poorly, but it's also because these two conferences are really good. I mean, there aren't, like you said, other than TCU in the Big 12, there are really no off nights in either league right now. And I think that's most of it. I mean, I'm not saying Oklahoma State is living up to their expectations, but I think part of it is just, I mean, these are really good leagues, and there's just not easy games.
Speaking of that, let's switch to a league that's not good. Let's talk about the SEC for a minute. We need to perform the last rites on Arkansas. Let's pour one out here for Arkansas. Let's just say goodbye to them. They're 2-6 now in a conference, and they just suspended two players for conduct detrimental. I think it was two pretty good players, too. I didn't see exactly the names, but they're pretty much done after losing to Missouri. I'd also like to welcome back Tennessee to the conversation, as they've, even though it's not really impressive to win at Alabama, winning on the road for this Tennessee team is something that they needed to do. They're 5-3 in the conference. At this point, I look at Florida kind of the same way I look at pre-injury Arizona, in that they're going to play the rest of the schedule in the SEC, and they've really only got, I think you could argue, two games, maybe three games, that I would classify as difficult, not even very difficult, just kind of a moderate level of difficulty. They still have to travel to Tennessee and Kentucky, and they still have Kentucky at home. This is not going to be a battle-tested team going into the tournament, as good as they might be from a talent perspective. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch this Florida team and see how they play in the tournament, because this will be the toughest teams that they've faced since that Kansas game that they had on the 10th of December. So that's the SEC overall, though, at this stage, I think at this point, you're still looking at three teams that are solidly in the field. I think Tennessee is solidly in, along with Florida and Kentucky. You've seen LSU creep up, though, Kyle, they look like they might be in contention for a bit at this stage. I don't know. It's them, Missouri, and that's really, I guess, maybe Ole Miss, and that would be about it at this stage in the conference.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, LSU's going to have to do it away from home. They haven't really shown that yet. They haven't even, up until recently, they hadn't even shown they could win at home. But, you know, I think LSU's got a shot. I actually think this Ole Miss team is showing signs of playing better. They kind of laid an egg at Tennessee last week. But I really think that they're playing better basketball. They've won, I think, six out of the last seven, if memory serves me correctly. I really like this Ole Miss team to make a run down the stretch. I mean, there's obviously not going to be a lot of quality wins to be had, but there are a lot of wins to be had. I think they'll get hot. If they can somehow, you know, knock off down the stretch, you know, maybe knock off Florida at home or knock off Kentucky at home, they've got those two back-to-back on February 18 and 22. You know, I think that Ole Miss has got a real shot at making some hay and getting in the field. But like you said, I mean, otherwise, you're looking at Florida, Kentucky are as solid locks. And then, you know, Tennessee and you know, Tennessee's probably on the safe side right now. And LSU, I think, and Ole Miss are the only two teams that have legitimate shots at a bid right now.
David?
LSU, it depends on what night you catch them. They're capable of playing really well, and they have, and they're capable of playing absolutely awful, and they have. I don't think it's to the level of Florida State, who I said it's the worst team with a good profile that I've ever seen. But, I mean, still, Florida, LSU, they're so inconsistent. I mean, you never know what's going to show up. So it wouldn't surprise me if they played their way, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they went out there and lost some absolute stinkers, and plenty of opportunity for them to do that too.
Yeah.
You know, I still feel a little bit better about Tennessee. I have them in. I don't have them safely in. They're on my bubble, but inside of it.
Yeah, I mean, when I say safely, I guess they're not in the bottom 10 of my at-large teams. So to me, I look at that as being pretty safe. One other game I wanted to note, and this is where it gets weird, I think, but SMU has one of those weeks that you're prone to see from teams that are still really trying to figure themselves out. But they lose at South Florida on Tuesday, and then they turn around and just annihilate Memphis at home yesterday, 87-72. They needed that win. I mean, I think that the loss to South Florida by itself might have pushed them off the bubble, because they really didn't have much on their resume. But now they have two quality wins. Granted, they're both at home, David, but yeah. SMU survives for another week.
It was surreal. I mean, it was multi-layered. First of all, SMU was playing a home game, and there were people there.
I know.
I mean, that's something that you really hadn't seen in years past. And SMU was playing a game of any kind, and they were ahead. Another thing that you're not used to seeing. And they were ahead of a fairly pretty good Memphis team, and they blew them out. The place was bananas. I mean, I don't know if you watched the game or not, but, I mean, it was off the hook. And I don't know what happened earlier in the week to South Florida. I think sometimes when you're going through those growing pains and building a program, maybe they were looking ahead to Memphis because it was a showcase. There were going to be people there. I'm almost certain the game was sold out, that they just forgot what they were supposed to be doing at South Florida. But
yeah,
whether this team gets in or not, I'd love to see them do it because, I always think it's fun to see teams without any history and that have been bad for a long time have big years every now and then, but it was still like a great moment for the growth of that program to beat a team like Memphis the way that they did in front of a crowd at home. I mean, I'm sure anybody that was at that game, they're running to buy tickets to the next one. I mean, it was awesome to see.
I didn't see it, but I've heard it looked like a David Griggs revival concert. I mean,
it wasn't that crazy.
People were on their knees and you know, looking to the sky and raising their hands up.
Speaking in tongues, all of that.
Wasn't that crazy.
Anyway.
That's what those mushrooms, I'm telling you, they'll work.
Okay, so quickly, before we move to this week's games, guys, I know, Kyle, you haven't done a full S-curve yet, but give me your number one seeds as of right now. I'll throw it to David first, since I know he's done a seed list recently.
Give me yours, but I'll throw it to David.
Well, I'm saying, Kyle, give me yours. I'm giving you a minute to think while I throw it to David.
I can name mine.
Well, good, then you go first. Fine.
Okay.
Okay. Let's just go to Kyle first then. I mean, if that's...
No, I've got Arizona, Syracuse, Florida, and despite the loss yesterday and 16-5 record, I've still got Kansas as my number one, just because the full depth of what they've done.
Okay, David.
Despite what happened yesterday, I don't think my teams would change, but my order would change. I still have Syracuse up there. I would have Arizona up there still because, again, their body of work is still incredible.
Yeah,
I like this Kansas team. They really didn't look it yesterday, but I still like them up there. And I have Michigan up there, who I didn't think I would have up there until I put it together and looked at them. But
I told you. I told you last week, didn't I?
Well, the reason I have them up there is because I just didn't want you to be the only outlier.
Thank you.
Which it's the same reason, by the way, I put Arizona State into my field as well.
I'm sure that's the reason why.
That is.
It's funny because I actually don't have Michigan as my fourth one seed. I have, in order at this point, Syracuse, and then I have my brain just went blank, Arizona and Kansas. My fourth is actually Villanova. And my feeling on that is they've got a high level of quality wins. They've actually got, I think, if, at least in my calculations, one more quality win than Michigan has, two more than Florida has. They're 10-1 on the road, and they've played the seventh toughest schedule in the country, which is significantly more difficult than what Florida's played. It's about the same as Michigan. I just like Villanova slightly more at this stage. I think they're more balanced.
That's fair. Let me ask you this, Galen. Villanova's profile is excellent. The thing I don't like about Nova is on the court, I don't think they're quite as good as they are on paper.
Well, I think
struggled a little bit. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think it's a good argument. I would counter by saying that you could probably say the same thing about Michigan. Michigan's been dynamite on offense. They're very average on defense. I mean, I think they're 61st in Pomeroy. I think Villanova, while they have had a couple of games where they've looked a little questionable, a lot of those have been on the road. I mean, the Creighton game notwithstanding, you know, they looked good to start the Syracuse game, and then the wheels fell off. You know, they had to go to Marquette, which is still a tough place to play. They had to go to Georgetown, which is still a tough place to play. They had to go to St. John's, which is turning into a tough place to play. That St. John's team seems to have woken up. I think. I really think overall, if you look at what they did earlier in the season by beating Kansas and Iowa on a neutral floor, I think that while recent results may make us think that they aren't quite as good as we thought they were, they're actually pretty good.
Okay, fair enough.
Let me just say, all this talk about seed lists, nothing matters from here on out the rest of the season with a seed list unless we're talking about what spot is Northwestern and who do they play in the first four. That's all that matters from here on out.
You know, it's funny because I can't wrap my head around this Northwestern team at all. And, you know, and they're still really not good. Like, I mean, if you look at the Pomeroy ratings, Right now they're 109th, and that's up from about 3 weeks ago when they went in to play Illinois. They were 171st. So they've improved tremendously, but we're still talking about a team that, quite frankly, is poor on the balance for the season. But yeah, they've won 4 of 5. They go into Wisconsin and Minnesota and win. They win 3 road games in the Big Ten in a row for the first time since, I think, 1961. And yeah. I mean, what's going on there is remarkable, because you want to talk about a lesson in contrast here. Look at their Pomeroy ratings for offense and defense. They have the 316th ranked offense in the country. They have the 10th ranked defense in the country. That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, that's nuts. And I give all respect in the world to Chris Collins for what he's doing up there right now.
I mentioned this to Griggs yesterday. Wouldn't it be just absolutely surreal if the last few years we've talked about, is this the year Northwestern finally makes it? Is this year? Well, this year nobody was talking about it. The first 2 months of the season, we wrote them off naturally, as we should. Wouldn't it be ironic if this is actually the year they somehow come back and finish the year, you know, with a bang and make the tournament when we weren't talking about it?
Well, and you look at their run out right now, and they could lose all of their road games and still finish 500 in conference. And you know, then I mean, they have road games: Michigan State, Ohio State, Nebraska, Purdue. 2 of those games are winnable. Their home games, they've got Nebraska, Minnesota, who doesn't traditionally play well on the road in the Big Ten, Indiana, who's a bit of a dumpster fire right now, and Penn State. I mean, that's all 4 of those games are eminently winnable. Finishing above 500 in conference is completely within the realm of possibility.
They go 6-2 in that stretch. If they go 6-2 in that stretch,
yep.
Welcome Northwestern. I'm telling you right now. Welcome Northwestern.
They really, I mean, they've got 2. What I guess you would classify as bad losses. They lost to DePaul at home, and they lost to Illinois State at home. Neither of those teams is horrific in the big scheme of things, and they lost those 2 games by a combined 5 points. The committee would absolutely talk themselves into putting Northwestern in the field, particularly since they've won against Wisconsin and Minnesota, and they beat Indiana on the road, which is still a rarity overall. So, yeah, this is something to keep an eye on.
Did you know Northwestern never made the field?
They have. Did you know that there was a campus attendance record yesterday?
Anyway, let's chat about some games moving forward here. So, by the time most of you listen to this podcast, this game will have already been over with. But Virginia at Pitt, I think we learn 2 things. We learn if Pitt is as much of a fraud as we think they are in this game, and we also learn if Virginia is a fraud, because a Virginia team that is legitimately a protected seed should be able to go into Pittsburgh and win this game. You agree, David?
I agree, and when I look at this game, I really see both teams coming out in the first 7 minutes or so and struggling offensively, struggling from the free throw line, and I think about 7 minutes in, the score's only going to be about 6-5.
Probably so. I like Virginia in this game. I think that I really think Pitt does not have what it takes to run with the big dogs in this conference, except for Syracuse, who they know so well from having played historically. Kyle, quickly, because we're running out of time, Michigan at Indiana, your victor in this game is who and why?
I think Indiana gets it done at home. I think the Big Ten is crazy. Michigan has been kind of shielded from that so far. I think the craziness catches up to them today. I really think Indiana is going to be jacked and wins this game. And I think Michigan's due for an off night.
That's fair. I think those are all. The thing with Indiana is, as bad as they've played at times, on the positive side is they can be in every game, and it's generally because they're playing at whatever the level of their opponent, which to me is the sign of a poorly coached team. But I do think it's going to be interesting because I think Michigan is kind of uniquely suited to beat this IU team, even though Michigan is probably due for a bad game. When you combine the fact that Michigan shoots well from the outside, they're not overly reliant on a post player, and Indiana beat them twice last year, and the last one was at home in the final game of the season.
And that's when we had that misunderstanding.
Which misunderstanding?
Tom Crean had a misunderstanding.
Oh, yes, that Jeff Meyer fiasco that went on after the game, which really you should call that the Tom Crean fiasco, because it wasn't Jeff Meyer that did anything. But, yeah, that was one for the ages, without question. I like Michigan in this game by 5. I wouldn't be shocked if Indiana won. Jumping ahead to Monday, Kyle, let me stick with you. Iowa State at Oklahoma State, who you got?
Well, this is a tough one. I think Oklahoma State's going to right the ship. Iowa State kind of they had a nice road win yesterday. It was a home win against Oklahoma, but they maybe got things going. But I think Oklahoma State's going to be revved up for this one. I'm going to go with the Cowboys.
David, your pick on that game and also Xavier at Villanova.
I like Oklahoma or I like Iowa State in this one simply because every time I look at it and reason that Oklahoma State really isn't that bad and maybe yeah they've been losing close games, they go out and lose. So because I think Oklahoma State's going to win, I'm going to go with Iowa State.
Fair enough.
Xavier, I just don't. They were so unbelievably disappointing yesterday against a really weak team at home. I just can't pick them to beat anybody good, let alone really good. I think Nova wins pretty easily.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I like Nova in that game. I like Oklahoma State, not so much because I do think Iowa State's good enough to win, but I don't think Iowa State fares particularly well away from Hilton. I mean, and they've lost their last three road games against teams of decent caliber. I mean, Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, but Oklahoma State's a team of decent caliber as well. So just off of the road thing, I'm going to go with the Cowboys winning at home. Also, a game that you should keep an eye on, folks. I'm not predicting the upset. I'm just saying it's possible. Syracuse is hosting Notre Dame. And Notre Dame, for as bad as they've been at times, they have shown an affinity sometimes for playing the random good game against top competition. Remember, they beat Duke at home. Syracuse is going to have a hell of a hangover after that Duke game on that we saw yesterday. So just keep an eye out for that one. You might have some surprising things happen.
Well, that's a good point. And remember, even Miami went in and gave Syracuse all they could handle at the Carrier Dome. So it's not like Syracuse is immune from this.
Right. David, Kansas Baylor on Tuesday. Kansas. No further comments there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good conference game. It's not as good as like a team that used to be in their conference. That would be exciting.
Shut up. Just would you let that go for God's sake? I'm tired of it. Kyle, two Big Ten games on Tuesday. Ohio State at Iowa, Wisconsin at Illinois. What are your picks in these games?
Well, first of all, how do you know Griggs wasn't talking about Nebraska?
Because he wasn't.
Could have been.
Well, yeah, like I mentioned earlier, I think Ohio State actually matches up a lot better with Iowa than they match up with Wisconsin. They were up 9 in the second half against Iowa and Columbus, just kind of blew it at the end. I think Ohio State wins this. I also think, you know, Illinois played pretty well and coming back against Iowa, almost pulled it out, but kind of fell at the end. I don't think they're going to have much luck against Wisconsin. They don't match up very well. I think Wisconsin will get it going as well. I think Ohio State, Wisconsin pull off the parlay here.
I mean, I will say this. I think if Wisconsin doesn't win this game, they're in serious danger of just spinning completely out of control because they've got two home games next week against teams that are going to give them problems, Michigan State and Minnesota. And then they have to travel to Michigan and travel to Iowa. I mean, that is a hell of a schedule under any circumstances. If they don't go into that stretch 5-5, if they lose this Illinois game and they're 4-6 going into that, they could end up with, you know, 8 or 9 losses before the last four game stretch that they have of the season. Now, granted, that's an easy stretch for them. Relatively speaking, they have Indiana, Penn State, Purdue, and Nebraska in their last four games. But I think for the mental health of that team, the Illinois game is as close to a must-win as you're going to get at this point in the season. Mm-hmm. As far as Ohio State-Iowa, I tend to agree with you on this. I think that here's the thing with Iowa, and I was noticing this last night when they were playing Illinois. This is a really schizophrenic basketball team. They have the talent and the ability really to beat anybody in the country, and I don't think that's hyperbole. I mean, they've demonstrated a lot of good qualities that I really enjoy. They're a fun team to watch. They run a lot. They have a lot of good players on the team. I don't think they really know who they are yet. They remind me a lot, actually, of Indiana 2 years ago. The team that beat Kentucky, and then they beat Ohio State early on in the conference, and then they kind of hit this patch of black ice in conference play in late January, and they really struggled against teams that they should. Now, Iowa, to their credit, you know, the only losses that they have in conference are at Wisconsin, at Michigan, and at home to Michigan State. But I feel nervous about them a lot of times when I see them on the floor, last night being a good example. So, yeah, I kind of like Ohio State in this game. I think Ohio State needs the game more than Iowa does. So we'll see. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up, actually, for us this week. Guys, any final thoughts? David, let me start with you.
I just hope everyone enjoys the big game today. You know, again, coming into the season, I think a lot of us felt that these were the two best teams in this league, and Mercer, USC, Upstate, big game should be a good one.
Well played. Well played, Griggs. Okay, Kyle, final thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I just hope that everybody realizes the next time Syracuse plays at the Carrier Dome that, yes, folks, they do draw over 30,000 people. Let's not act like this is some newfound thing. I don't know why the media has to beat this to a bloody pulp every time they play. They're going to draw a record crowd, 35,000. Okay, they draw 30,000 routinely. Who cares? Yeah, let's get over it, people.
Yeah, Syracuse is, you know, they have the largest capacity building that they play in as a home venue in all of the NCAA. So just keep that in mind. But no, it's look, if we didn't beat those things into a pulp, Kyle, Dana O'Neill would have nothing to write about.
So beating things into a pulp next week, the week after this rivalry week, and oh my God, I'm going to beat a rivalry that does not exist anymore into a pulp.
Can't wait.
I want that
At
series.
Least he's giving us fair warning.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's like the other fair warning we got about advocating Georgetown as a tournament team. But anyway, guys, enjoyed it as always. Everybody out there, enjoy basketball, particularly this Penn State-Purdue game, which Penn State is winning by 8 right now. And then also, please enjoy the Super Bowl this evening. I'm sure you all have a wonderful time. Thanks for listening and watching, if you are indeed watching at this point. For David Griggs, for Kyle Lamb, I'm Galen Clavio. This has been the Bracket Racket. We'll catch you on the flip side. So long, everybody.